Hello, it is November 9th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 536 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I know we said only one podcast this week, but actually we got an extra one today. We're still going to talk to Matt Norlander on Wednesday, previewing the college basketball season, which begins Friday. We have a special edition today with Anthony Kastrovitz. He's a writer, of course, for MLB.com as well as Sports on Earth. He just wrote a piece for Sports on Earth looking at all the free agents, making some big predictions of where everyone's going to go. That seemed worthy of a conversation because the hot stove is upon us. The free agency is here. This is a very active free agent season. This is probably the most fun it's going to be for a while. I think next year it's like Steven Strasburg and like nobody else. Usually guys get wrapped up. This one is very exciting. We have lots to go over. So I want to preview the free agency off-season hot stove business with Mr. Kastrovitz. And then I will be back on Wednesday with Matt Norlander. So yeah. Double podcast fun, free agent previews, pew, 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 pew. That was Six Shooting Laser Cats, pew, pew. Here's Anthony. All right, Anthony, first off, thank you for coming on with me. I don't know if you agree with me or not. I said this in the intro. This feels like not only one of the better free agent markets we've seen in a while, but actually like one of the last ones we're going to see for a while. You know, I know it feels like after the Pools year, Fielder year, everyone was like, oh, well, this is – you know, now people are going to sign their own players. You're not going to see as many of an open market. And we actually feel like we did see that for a while this year for a variety of circumstances, variety of reasons. There's a big market. But next year it looks like Strasburg and maybe a couple other guys. This feels as flooded as we might see it for a while.
Yeah, it's nice. It's kind of a vintage free agent market in that way. And you're right. I mean, the last few have been kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel in many respects, and a lot of value plays there. And we've seen the Red Sox 2 years ago and the Royals this year, you know, make the most of that and find value in the free agent market. This year, I think there'll be some of that, and also just a lot of intrigue with these top guys because, you know, the game's pretty flush with cash at the moment, and there's a lot of moving parts right now. We've seen that the last couple trade deadlines especially. Just a lot of creativity going on and big salaries moving around. And so, I don't know, there's no easy picks here when you look at the list, you know. There's no slam dunk, even for the guys who you might have thought a few months ago, well, you know, you figure the Cardinals retain Hayward or the Dodgers retain Greinke. But, you know, you start to look at it, and with so much depth and free agency, those guys could move, and teams can go in all kinds of different directions. So we'll see.
It doesn't seem to me a coincidence with the amount of money that's kind of come flush into the game the last few years that they have, like, it feels like it's an agent strategy now, whereas it used to be get your money while you can. Now it kind of feels like those kind of Salvador Perez, Evan Longoria deals, I think, are clearly seen as loss leaders for the players. And I think they're encouraging players to go for this money while they can. Right.
Yeah. I think this market represents a little bit of a market correction, you know. Obviously, Hayward was very wise to never do an in-house extension because the Braves did a lot of those back in the day, a couple years ago. But he was very wise to stay away because now he's a 26-year-old free agent, which is gold, you know. And even like Mike Trout's extension, I know that only takes him to, what, his early 30s, maybe 30 or so. So, you know, he can still score big. And we're seeing more of these contracts like the Giancarlo Stanton contract where there's an opt-out in the middle there where he can still score big on the open market if he so chooses. So, yeah, there's money to be made out there. And I get that, you know, I'm guessing if I was a player, I'd be one of those to lean towards the sure thing because that's maybe the way I am. But there is something to be said for those who gamble on themselves if they can get to this point.
Yeah, I would never gamble on myself. I would constantly. That's the difference. You know, that's the difference between, I think, us as professional athletes is we, you know, we spend most of our lives waiting for someone to tap us on the shoulder and be like, "All right, joke's over, pal."
Right. And, well, it's just, you know, break my ankle or something, you know.
Yeah. That's what happened to me. Yeah, but athletes, that, you know, they think that they're, you know, they. I think you don't think you get to that level by thinking, "Oh, it's all going to fall apart." So you know, betting on yourself is what they do all the time.
I was going to say, that's kind of my point with this qualifying offer thing. You know, it's $15.8 million guarantee for 1 year, which is easy for us to say, well, gosh, how do you turn that down if you're Ian Kennedy or Marco Estrada? But, you know, these are guys, you got it. They're on a different level. Just tremendous belief in their abilities, and often rewarded for that. And so I get that. I think this will be another year where everybody turns down a qualifying offer and goes for multi years.
All right. Well, let's go through. I want to go through the top 10 or so guys. So we're gonna use MLB Trade Rumors top 10 list, because I don't want to use Keith Laws, because he has Hayward first, and I'm not ready to talk about him yet. So we're going to start with MLB Trade Rumors. We'll go with their prediction. We'll go with your prediction. Their number one guy, who I'm not sure would be my number one guy, though I understand why he's there, is David Price. They are predicting the Cubs. Where do you have David Price going?
Yeah, I struggle with the Cubs doing two of those, having, $155 million for Lester on your 1 year into that, and then maybe a $200 million contract or thereabouts for Price. I just struggle to see two of those guys in that rotation. That would be somewhat reckless on their part. So I'm going to go Giants there. I just think the Giants are inordinately flush in this market. They had a ton of expiring contracts. And, they had this proposition that passed last week in San Francisco that's going to amount to a license to print money for them, a real estate project near the ballpark. And they obviously, draw very well and are just doing wonders in that market. So I think they've got as good a shot as anybody at setting the market for a pitcher of Price's ilk.
It feels weird, though, that we're talking. I understand giving a guy like Hayward, or in a couple of years. It's funny to think of the apocalypse going to happen when Harper comes on the market after 2018. It's going to be like 25. I understand giving those guys 10, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Right. It feels like even with the way as durable as Price has been, it feels like giving a pitcher a 7-year contract, which may be what it takes to get him, feels like maybe ignoring history a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm just totally past the point of even thinking in those terms because, that is my nature to think like that.
right.
Then the Max Scherzer contract happens last year. And granted, it was very, a lot of that money was backloaded. It was an odd contract in that sense. But that was the one where I go, okay, I know nothing, because I did not think that guy would clear that much money. Nothing against Max Scherzer. It's just, I just thought the industry at large had kind of wised up. But all it takes is one ravenous team or hungry owner, or in that case, a little creativity as well. So, I don't know. I'm past the point of just dismissing the possibility of a 30-year-old like David Price, getting that 7-year crazy amount of money deal.
Yeah, I think that MLB Trade Rumors thinks that he could actually hit Kershaw's number at 7 years. He was 7 years, 215. Yeah. They had them at 7 years, 217. That seems... That seems crazy. But is this the type of thing where, some of the other teams would be involved in this. Boston could be in this. The Dodgers, you always have to consider the Cubs with this. And, of course, the Blue Jays, I don't think they're going to give up on them either. But, speaking about the Giants, do you think this is the first of several things? I know you mentioned, I guess we might as well get into this now. You mentioned that it's not just Price that you think is going to the Giants.
I don't know. In my prediction speaks that Price and Upton, and maybe that's overly ambitious. Maybe it's a starter just below the Price. Maybe it's a Cueto. I don't know, but I can definitely see them getting an impact starter and an impact bat because of the reasons I just mentioned. If their payroll increases around 10% for next year, which is I don't think unreasonable given those conditions I mentioned, they got $50 million to play with for their 2016 payroll picture. So that's a ton of cash. That gives them the opportunity to augment their outfield and their rotation. And again, maybe it's ambitious to say Price plus somebody, but I definitely think there's a lot of impact to be made there. I think Upton's a good fit for them for left field, and obviously they could use some power in that lineup. Whether it's Price and Upton or two other guys, I really think they're going to be market drivers here this winter. Part of that, maybe I'm just married to the even year theory, but
right.
I see them making some big splashes and really going for it for 2016.
All right, well, we're going to skip their number two person because, again, not really talking about Harry, but also we should keep the pitchers together. Zach Greinke opting out, surprising no one. It's funny how many of these contracts now Yeah, I feel like that's maybe a good sign for players. I tend to usually, unless they're the Cardinals, I tend to side with players in every possible contract discussion. And it's certainly a good thing for players to have that opt out across the board. It's like the new equivalent of the no trade clause. Like it's the extra little thing that you get in there. Greinke certainly benefited from that, but there still seems to be this notion among a lot of people that Greinke, sure, he opted out, but a lot of people don't actually think he's going anywhere. But do you?
In my prediction speech, I threw out the Red Sox as a possibility because he does have some personal connections there. Brian Bannister, and Allard Barrett, who's with the Red Sox now, the guy who originally drafted and signed him. And then the other part of me thinks, and I think he's past these issues, but he does have the past social anxiety issues that were very well documented. And that's a tough market to pitch in. We all know that. So maybe I'm just selfishly rooting for regular interactions with the Boston media and Zach Greinke because I think that could be interesting. But
That'd be a way to put
yeah,
it.
but my initial gut feeling is the same that I mean, he'll probably stay, right? I mean, the Dodgers to let that fearsome twosome get away over a little thing like money. Come on, he was already written into their books for the next 3 years. It's a matter of extending that, basically, much like the Yankees with Sabathia some years back. And we know it'll be horrendous on the back end, but we also know they can manage that. So I don't know. That's my gut feeling, and then I think my hopeful prediction is Red Sox.
The Dodgers are fascinating in the idea that so much for this team that has this massive payroll and all these, and there are times late in the season where their lineup had above average hitters in all eight spots. But still, so much of their identity seems tied up in those top two pitchers, and it does feel like a waste if they weren't to bring him back.
And obviously there's a need to augment that situation beyond that and hopefully find some controllable assets because you can't be too top heavy even for them. You can't be too top heavy. They've proven that, they've proven that the last years they struggled to get where they're trying to go in October. There hasn't been much enough depth beyond those two guys in that rotation. So it'll be a fascinating team this winter because again, you kind of assume they'll just go the distance with Greinke. We haven't mentioned the Giants there as well, possibly stealing him away. But I know that, Andrew Friedman is going to run this club. One thing, everybody talked about the $300 million, luxury tax payroll this year, but some chunk of that was taking on some bad contracts to get some controllable assets. I think where he's generally steering that ship is away from the knee-jerk, oh, go out and get a top-flight pitcher or whatever free agency. I think he's valuing the long term, the young controllables, and trying to get that payroll somewhat manageable so they're not paying the luxury tax penalty year after year after year. So, we'll see. This will be a fascinating winter for them for that perspective because it could be a turning point. And maybe Greinke represents that. Maybe they do let him walk and let some other team take on the burden that'll come on the back end of that deal. Nothing would surprise me with them because this is one of the more creative executives in the game. And sometimes to his detriment, I think he maybe got a little too cute at this year's trade deadline, for instance, because they didn't have enough depth. They just didn't. So I don't know if they'll take that as a lesson learned and just go all in on Greinke or somebody else, or if they'll continue to go down this path of just trying to get basically younger and cheaper.
Well, this begs the question, while we're on the Dodgers, there are two players here that we should discuss in there. Then one, of course, is the big question with them: is Puig a Dodger next year? On one hand, it seems like a big headache. On the other, and all, has caused all sorts of trouble. On the other hand, you've got a new manager coming in. You've got this, we're talking about the idea of the Dodgers trying to get things under control. This is a cheap, controllable asset, regardless of whatever headache he may be. Is what they do with Puig maybe a signifier from which direction they're going to?
Yeah, it could be. And, in my piece, I'm not ruling out the possibility of Puig being traded and going after Hayward, who, again, that would be going after the top of the market, but I think he's unique in that respect. And we'll talk about Hayward more in a minute, I know, but he's unique in that respect that he is 26 years old. So, Puig's a big one. I'm predicting him to move, Will, but that comes with the obvious caveat that I predicted the same a year ago. It didn't happen.
It does feel a little different. It does feel a little different this time, though. Like it does.
It does.
Yeah,
it does. You know, I'll be curious to see what they do with their managerial move here because, you know, I think Don Mattingly, for as much as he got ripped as an in-game strategist, what have you, I think he did handle some of those Puig distractions about as well as you could. And if Puig is there next year, years forward, you know, that'll be a big part of whoever comes in. That'll be a big part of their job because the guy has, you know, there's certainly been issues related to Yasiel Puig. There's no getting around it. He's another worldly talent, but there's been some distractions that come with that. So, you know, if they trade him this winter, some will see that as selling low. Maybe it's opportunistic. You know, maybe the big breakout season that we're all expecting from Puig, and by breakout I mean like a true MVP type season. Maybe it's not in there. I'm not sure. But I do think he's got the talent to do that. It hasn't transpired yet. He's had some amazing runs and also some amazingly disappointing stretches. And this entire season will qualify as that. So I don't know. I mean, if there's an opportunity to get some, again, young, controllable pitching to augment that rotation, you know, I could see them moving Puig, and maybe that compels them to go after Hayward. I'm not sure.
Yeah, look, it's probably time to talk about Hayward now. Certainly when
dreading it.
I know. When the Cardinals made that trade, you know, I think it's almost a holdoff over from the Jocketty era. Everyone just assumes that, oh, the Cardinals made the trade for a guy. He's just going to love St. Louis so much that he's going to re-sign. Because Holiday did it, McGuire did it, and Edmonds did it. But, you know, also lots of people don't. And all of those people also got signed, except with the possible exception of McGuire. All of them were signed to market rate deals. Like it's not like they got a deal on Holiday or they got a deal on Edmonds when they re-signed them long term. They still had to pay top dollar. And so while there was this idea that Hayward's just going to love it so much, and he seems to love it in St. Louis, and certainly it feels like they, even if they didn't unlock his power, they unlocked his game. Like he clearly enjoys not being the one who everyone's hopes are riding on every single thing that he does every day, the way that he was in Atlanta. And I think he clearly thrived that way in St. Louis. So it certainly still seems like a fit in both regards, particularly because the Cardinals are a team that are getting older, and they'd love to have a young, superstar-controlled guy to transition from the Wainwright era and the Molina era to the Hayward era. So that sounds all great and everything, but then you start looking at the numbers, and the Cardinals have some payroll muscle, but do they have $21 million a year for 10 years muscle? Once you get into that territory, you're really talking about the Yankees and the Dodgers and maybe not anybody else.
Well, and for me, it's with the Cardinals and the new television contract, you know, sure to impact things moving forward or projecting out. You know, for me, it's not so much a question of financial muscle as it is just brains and balls, so to speak, because you know, it will be a courageous deal for whoever goes at this. And I think Hayward's number one free agency this year for me. I think he'll get the largest contract. And it might include an opt-out, as we mentioned. But, you know, I think he's the easiest bet to clear $200 million just because of his age. I think aging curve is something that's impacted the game considerably in the post-steroid era, and it impacted decision-making considerably. So here's an opportunity, a rare opportunity, to get an impact player on both sides of the ball who's 26 years old. And, you know, he's going to score big. Because of the TV money, I can see the Cardinals signing him. But I know Holiday was late. I think McGuire was – I think that was done before that season was even over when he got traded over. So, I mean, generally, you're right. Generally, guys move on. And then the guys who do stay, generally speaking – it would probably be done by now.
Yeah.
You know, you would think it would be worked out by now. I think this is a guy who's obviously, you know, motivated and understandably so to see what's out there. And I think there will be a lot out there for him for all the reasons I just mentioned. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a Yankees or Dodgers. You know, the Astros are a team with tremendous amount of payroll flexibility moving forward. They do have to consider, you know, all these young bodies they've developed. You know, those guys are going to be hitting arbitration at some point, so they're going to get expensive. But you know, as we sit here today, you know, you might be able to fit a Jason Hayward into that picture. The Cubs are a giant right now, and they are very much in play for this. So we'll see. I come back to the Cardinals can do this, I think, financially. It's just a matter of this is an organization that's never exactly been reckless in its pursuits. And, you know, I think there's opportunity for them to fill their outfield with what they have in-house and to maybe augment their offense in another way. I think there's a pretty glaring need for power in that lineup, and we've seen that the last couple of years. And Hayward did, you know, he did make strides in the power department this season, but, you know, he's still not the 25 home run guy that he was in 2012 and everybody hopes and expects him to be. I think he is what he is. You know, he's a tremendous defender, and obviously he can get on base for you, and he can, you know, ignite a lineup near the top of the lineup. But I think with the power they might be better off using those resources elsewhere.
You know, I want to ask about power before we get into that, because I'll talk about the Cardinals for an hour if you let me. Generally speaking, when it comes to Hayward and power, you know, that is on what, you know, I think if you look back at the last 5 years, even accounting for injury, he's outproduced Stanton, for example, in WAR. And certainly, you know, he's one of the top, you know, at his age, he's one of the top, you know, I think Fangraphs had a thing where he's like one of the top 30 or 35 players producing WAR up to this point in his career at his age. So that's very impressive and everything. But, you know, people still generally pay for power. And
right.
And power tends to age a little better. And it, to me, my fear about Hayward, you know, it's the if the power doesn't develop, because it still feels like even at the money, you know, if he's going to be at the top of the list, there's still going to be a little part of any team that's going to pay him that much that's doing a little bit of wish casting. And they're like, okay, the 20 power homer power is coming back. I know it. It's going to,
because
when he gets into one, you're like, oh, this guy should be hitting 35 homers a year. So there's a little bit of that happening. Is the fear that people have that like when you're paying for Stanton, assuming he's healthy, you know you're getting power. You might that you're not going to get the all around player, but you know you're getting power. As for me, as great as this Jason Hayward is young, as he gets older, it feels like 31-year-old Jason Hayward is a less valuable player than 31-year-old Giancarlo Stanton.
Right. Yeah, you could be absolutely right. And you know, he's a divisive player in that sense. And I think Hayward kind of provokes a much bigger discussion, which is about wins above replacement and about how we value players. And, you know, I can't remember ever talking to an executive who actually cited wins above replacement as a decision-making tool. You know, every organization has its own calculus of how it evaluates players, and that's not publicly available the way wins above replacement is. And wins above replacement, we know, is it can be misleading in that it is often very much weighted in defensive metrics that are always changing, you know, and aren't always reliable. So, you know, has Jason Hayward been one of the top, like you said, 25, 30 players in the game for the last few years? I mean, that's a pretty loaded question. I would, over the full scope of it, I would say no.
Yeah.
For me, I know he's a gifted defensive outfielder. But again, that's different than being a gifted defensive shortstop right off the bat.
Right.
So, you know, for me, it's tough to value him in that way. So I don't know. I think different organizations will value that differently, put it that way. And I don't know that, you know, again, a 31-year-old Jason Hayward, like you said, because the defensive side will slip in some measure, however we measure that. So it's going to be a big one, because this will be kind of the litmus test for how much, and he's got offensive skill set, so it's not he's not a totally defensive side player, but this will certainly be a litmus test of how much in the game today is defense worth, because you know that is where that WAR total is coming from primarily, is from his defensive value.
Yeah, it feels like his is the deal that everyone will wait on. Maybe not outside the pitching. The pitching may be going on a different schedule, but it certainly feels among hitters and without as many outfielders and hitters as there are around. Do you think that's the deal that everyone will wait to see what that market that sets and then move on, or do you think that's one that might drag out?
Well, I think my best guess here is the two areas where there's depth. First of all, you start with starting pitching. There's a tremendous amount of depth in starting pitching. And it kind of reminds me, a couple years ago, we had this huge rush towards second-tier starters. Tim Hudson signed early. Ryan Vogelsong signed early. There was a handful of guys. We could see something like that where, you know, there's so many top-end guys, maybe the mid-tier guys, like a Jay App, for instance, who's coming off a really great second half with the Pirates. I could see him being one of the first guys off the board. Teams going for that value right away. It could be one of those deals. Last year we saw the bats move very quickly. Russell Martin, Hanley Ramirez, Pablo Sandoval, I think all those guys signed before Thanksgiving or certainly before the winter meetings. And that kind of speaks to the value of offense in today's game. But, so it's always – you just don't know where the first dominoes are going to fall or how they're going to fall. I always lean towards starting pitching going early or going quickly. Maybe not the price I think Cueto's the guy who'll drag out, but, you know, maybe not those elite guys, but I think those second-tier and mid-tier guys, I think they're going to fly off the board pretty quickly.
All right, well, so we'll go through. So there's the top four so far. So you have Price. I'm going to include my friend Ben Ryder, who has a good one for Sports Illustrated. It's SI.com site, so it's taken me about 20 minutes to load, and it has all sort of design things in this. And Maggie Gray, who I like very much, is talking to me before I have a chance to actually scroll down and see who they have. But
and
once
a lot of bikini pictures on the side or on the bottom. Correct?
Of course. Oh yeah. But otherwise, yeah. Otherwise, Sports Illustrated is very inclusive. I love making fun of SI. Out of love, but okay. So they have Ben has David Price as you picked him to the Giants. MLB trade rumors picks Price to the Cubs, and Ryder picks Price to the Yankees.
Oh,
yes, has Price to the Yankees. Greinke, Dodgers. You said Red Sox, but you also allotted for the possibility of Dodgers. Hayward, you have Hayward to the the Dodgers. You have Hayward to the Dodgers. MLB trade rumors has him to the Yankees, and Ryder has him through the Phillies, which I understand it. I feel like that is the worst possible place for Hayward personally to go, because when he's not a 35 home run hitter and they realize how much money he's making, they will never stop giving him crap, ever. So I understand I get it, but man, I don't. At that point, take a couple million a year less.
Yeah, that would be a total money grab on Hayward's part, which is
fine
to happen.
Yeah,
it would be odd on the Phillies' part, obviously, their timetable. But again, we're talking about a 26-year-old, so the timetable is a little different than typical free agency. So, I don't say that's totally out of the realm of possibility. I just think that if the Phillies are smart, they'll take the hurt, the total just gutted out hurt of the season and do bold things like this moving forward. But, it's a crazy game. Well, you can't predict these things. That might just happen.
And then number five is, Russell Wilson's picture has just come down. Braun to face greatness with official. No, that's not what it is. We're looking at Justin Upton. You have Justin Upton. MLB Trade Rumors has Justin Upton to the Nationals, which I think is interesting. You have Justin Upton to the Giants, and Ben has Justin Upton to the Mariners, which I guess also makes a little bit of sense as well. Let's talk about the most one fascinating guy that a lot of people think cost himself some money in the post season, though to me I think it's more that he was injured and then had a couple clumsy moments in center field, as will happen, is Yonis Cespedes, a guy that people were predicting was going to go nuts in August and then slowed down in October. Where do you think he stands?
Yeah, I don't know. He might have cost himself some 20-30 million for all we know. We'll never know, because there'll never be a point where he was being offered anything in mid-September, but I think he kind of showed the player he's been in the past. He's had some lapses defensively. He's had some lapses in judgment. And, we know he's a divisive player as well, because it's the great power potential versus a game that increasingly values on-base percentage,
And he's very low
back to that.
He's weirdly low. And getting worse.
Back to the yeah, and getting more exactly. And Shinsu Chu's contract was kind of a stunner, but also kind of a telltale moment where, OBP had never been valued quite like that for a guy, never been an all-star player or anything of that nature. Maybe Cespedes gets the same amount of money as Chu for an entirely different reason. I don't know. But he's also a tough one to predict because there's, you know, he's not an obvious fit in any of the big markets. As we sit here today, you know, barring some trades to free things up, you know, like if the Yankees were to move Brett Gardner, for instance, you know, maybe they can go after Cespedes. But you know, as we sit here today, I don't see, like, he was one of the harder ones for me to predict. I have him going to the Marlins just because I think I'm mostly imagining those neon arm sleeves in Miami. It just feels right. But also, if they are serious about moving Marcell Ozuna, as has been speculated, then you know, then you can go after Cespedes and have an inordinately expensive corner outfield setup.
Oh, that would be fun, though. That would be fun.
It would be fun. Cespedes
standing in the lineup. Ooh, that would be very enjoyable.
That would be very fun, and certainly generate interest in a market that needs it.
Yes, but the real question is, of course, where would they be traded then in 2 years? All right, so they have MLB Trade Rumors has him to the Angels, as does Ben. Ben also has him to the Angels.
Okay.
So, which makes sense. Let's go to a guy that I think is a I meant to jump to after we talked Hayward, and that is Chris Davis. Certainly, there is, to me, he's a fascinating guy because it's a pure power play. Like this is, that's what you're getting. I mean, he gets on base is not bad, but you know, this is a pure power guy, an unlike power, you know, it's crazy power. And also the thing that you forget about Davis, he's not even 30 yet. He'll be 30 by the time the season starts. I think he turns 30 right before the season starts, but he's still a relatively young guy. What do you see as a good landing spot for Davis?
Well, and the other thing about Davis, it's not even just that he's pure power. It's just that it's so incredibly streaky. You know, he'll go through stretches where he's the most dominant player on the field, and he'll go through stretches where he just looks totally overwhelmed, and what is he doing out there? All right, I got him going to your Cardinals, Will, because, again, I see them pivoting away from the escalating Hayward market and saying, you know what, we're going to stick Stephen Piscotty in right, and we're going to improve our power potential that we need at first base. And so maybe that, you know, leads to a Matt Adams trade of some sort. But I'm going to say Chris Davis with the Cardinals.
Yeah, I can see that. I can also see that. Thank you. It's not just you. MLB Trade Rumors also has him to the Cardinals. Ben has him to the Red Sox. My only concern about that is I do think a little you can just stick Piscotty out there thing. While it certainly makes sense that Piscotty is nice, is I feel like if they'd rather go up a little bit on Hayward to do that, if just because, you know, the problem is actually not Piscotty, it's Holiday and Grichuk, and that Grichuk, they don't know quite if he's really a center fielder yet. And if he actually is a center fielder, then that totally makes sense and you can do that. But if he's not a center fielder, then you've got almost too many outfielders hanging around. You almost have to put Piscotty. Right. So, like, if he's not a center fielder, you can put, like, you're not going to put Piscotty out there, but Grichuk, maybe need to put him in left. You don't know how much you have for Holiday next year. To me, that's, you know, for a team like the Cardinals that wants to win now, and certainly wants to build something for the future, but clearly wants to win now, I wonder how much, this is the last year of Holiday's contract, I wonder how much they're going to count. I feel like they're going to give themselves backup options to Holiday this year. And I wonder, and to me, that is, everything lines up with Hayward. I'm actually think Hayward's going to stay with the Cardinals. I think they will pay crazy for him, specifically that idea. But if it gets so high that they can't touch it, Davis makes a ton of sense. He is a young enough guy. The MLB Trade Rumors has him at 6 years. That seems a long time, but again, he's 30. Mm. That's not too bad. Yeah. He's a power guy. Switcher, they've got 6 years at 144. My own, for me, if you look at, I'll put it this way. If you're talking about the Cardinals, what they would do, 6 years at 144, at that point, 10 years at 200 for Hayward, I don't know if they're going to blanch at that. Like, to me, those seem like relatively not that far. If they'd be willing to give $6 million to Chris Davis at 144, I feel like they'd be willing to give 200 to Hayward at 10 years.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah, and Davis strikes me as the guy who will cause the most amount of regret one way or another in this free agent market because of that inherent streakiness. And, you know, yeah, there'll be regret either by the club that signs him or the club that stays away, you know, and gets scared off by the streakiness. Because again, he can be a really game changing player. He was the fundamental reason the Orioles were in it going into August, and they of course quickly spent a lot of it in August. He had an awful month. But he was the guy who really, you know, when he caught fire there early in the second half, he was unbelievable. So he'll be a fascinating player. There's a handful of guys who strike me as particularly fascinating in this market. I'm sure we'll touch on others in that list in a second.
Yeah, so, okay, let's get to two more pitchers. And I'm curious how they compare to each other. You have someone like Jordan Zimmermann, who would, you know, as a former Tommy John guy, you would think would be the less reliable one, but he actually feels like the one you can count on more than the other pitcher I want to kind of compare it to, which is Johnny Cueto. I think some people have them around the same, some people a little short, a little longer. If you're a GM, who do you trust over the next 5 years more, Jordan Zimmermann or Johnny Cueto? Because it's going to be a 5 year, I'm assuming, for each of these guys. Who do you trust more in that scenario?
Well, I'm glad we did have a natural segue then to my fascinating, particularly fascinating free agents list I just alluded to, because both these guys are on it for me. Because, you know, Zimmermann, for the reasons you mentioned, you know, he fell back this year, but I would trust Zimmermann over Cueto. I don't know why that is, but I think it's the recency bias of what we just witnessed from Cueto in his tenure as a Royal. It was something else, man. I can't remember a trade acquisition of that ilk, you know, varying between two extremes the way Johnny did. You know, I certainly would probably lean towards Cueto if I was an NL team. I'd be more willing to take a chance on Cueto if I was a National League team. He seems like one of those guys who that league differentiation matters. But overall, I would trust Zimmermann over Cueto at this stage. I think he's got maybe less durability concerns. That, you know, he's had the surgery, that's in the past, and there is of course the occasion and occurrence of a second surgery, but, you know, Cueto kind of scared me off with what we saw this year, you know, having a couple starts pushed back because of the elbow, and then he just didn't look a guy. There are stretches this in his time with the Royals, he just didn't look comfortable, and that would worry me.
Yeah, man. I wonder how much money him laughing when he went off the mound in that World Series game actually cost him. Not the World Series game, excuse me, the NLCS game.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that, there was just something about it that people just were like, wait, what is that? Like, what's he doing? And I get it. Like, listen, you know, I think we spend too much time trying to dime store psychology evaluations on these guys. But certainly, that was weird. Like, a lot of people were like, I don't know if I trust this guy now.
Yeah, he's had, you know, crowds like to get on Cueto. There was, of course, the famous dropping the ball moment in the wild card game in Pittsburgh. Maybe that just crowds feed off that and feel like they can get in this guy's head. But it really said something. And the Royals definitely made a point with their World Series rotation. This guy's pitching in Kauffman Stadium. He's not pitching on the road.
Right.
We're not letting that happen. And he was wonderful. He was wonderful in game two. So I don't know. He's going to be fascinating for me. I could totally see him being that guy, kind of like Shields last year, where it lingers, you know, deep in the winter, you know, into and through January. Who knows? But I don't know. I got Cueto going to the D-backs. Yeah. I see it's kind of an old school souls in that organization, and valuing just, you know, the innings he can put up, and you know, I think that's a team that is very close to contending if it can get the right pitching help. So maybe, you know, there's an opportunity there where his price does drop enough so that they're in the ball game. I'm not sure. And then I got Zimmermann going to the Cubs because I'm kind of zigging when other people are zagging, so to speak, with everybody thinking Price is going to the Cubs. I think they'll go for a little more of a value play in Zimmermann, counting on a bounce back year. And, as I wrote in the piece, he's from suburban Chicago, otherwise known as Wisconsin.
Well, listen, as far as from my experience, most people that are from suburban Chicago say they're from Chicago. So,
that's right. Where are you from? Chicago. What part of Chicago? Milwaukee.
Yeah, Naperville. Yeah, that is not Chicago. Homewood is not Chicago. I like that Zimmermann Cubs pick a lot. That makes a lot of sense for kind of the way they see it. I see why they would go after a price type guy, but I can see them hitting a level. It's similar to kind of what you're saying with the Cardinals and Hayward. Like, they'll hit a level and be like, you know what? This is, we want him, but we actually know better than to do this. And it feels like Zimmermann is the guy that they take the next step. I wouldn't even say next step down. But Zimmerman certainly, and I definitely can't see a team like the Cubs touching Cueto. That feels like that. I think they want more certainty in the rotation than that. So,
I just feel like Zimmerman could be kind of a sleeping giant in this market
because he's
the guy getting the least amount of attention in that upper tier. And he's a guy who, if he'd been a free agent a year ago, I think it's a lot different conversation. He obviously had, he had a bit of regression this year, but this is a guy who was really viewed as the heart and soul of that national starting staff for a long time, you know, a real leader of men, so to speak. So, I think some teams are going to get a good value there with him.
All right, MLB trade rumors has Zimmerman going to the Blue Jays and Cueto going to the Red Sox, which seems like trouble. Again, I think this time every time a Red Sox are going to sign a guy. I guess it used to be the Yankees when Steinbrenner was running there, but now it's the Red Sox. Now it's the you need to be absolutely certain in mind, soul, and body if you're going to be as a free agent in Boston or you're asking for trouble. And Ben has Zimmerman to the Cubs and has Cueto to the Rangers, which I think is kind of interesting. So we're running a little short on time, so I want to run by who are your there's Alex Gordon, there's Matt Wieters, there's some other guys certainly fascinating here. You talked about a couple other guys that you were very compelled to keep an eye on this postseason. Which some of those guys do you mean?
Well, just guys who, you know, it's very hard to read what their market's going to be. Ian Desmond, there's a guy who turned down, I can't remember the number he reportedly turned down from Washington. It was well north of $100 million. And now he had this just awful year, an awful first half, I should say. He was miserable defensively and offensively. And now, you know, there's not a lot of obvious fits. Teams are looking for a shortstop to be moved off of that position. So where does he end up? I'll be really curious to see that. Jeff Samardzija, who, again, a year ago, I think his free agency would be in a much different conversation than it is now. Is he a guy affected by having the qualifying offer? You know, guy with great stuff, but you look at the totality of his career and he's been basically a league average pitcher with some inordinately great stretches within that, but overall league average. So who really, you know, bites the bullet and goes hard after Samardzija? I'd be curious to see that. Matt Wieters is another one. You know, obviously a lot different conversation before the Tommy John surgery than after. You know, is the team going to bank on him being fully healthy and that offense coming back to the level it once was? Because, you know, there's a guy who's really a game-changing defender, but again, how much value do we place on the defense? The offense has to be there as well. And so, you know, he's a guy who makes someone look incredibly foolish or incredibly brilliant because we've seen the importance of having a stout defensive catcher back there, and he can certainly give you that. So we'll see what the market bears for him.
All right, and the last thing you have in your column I thought was really fascinating. You have the idea, you have the Red Sox making a big trade.
Yes. Well, I have Dave Dombrowski making a big trade.
Right.
So it's now a totally different mindset there. You know, I think Ben Cherington, he certainly made some big trades, but he was more reluctant to part with those prospects than I think Dombrowski might be, or just young players in general. And you know, you never rule out somebody making a personal sea change and maybe Dombrowski holds tight to those guys, but I can totally see him being the guy who goes after Aroldis Chapman, for instance. And cause he's already kind of talked up, the value of getting a power arm sort of proven closer back there. I know there's a lot of focus on an ace and maybe they'll make a trade for an ace, but if anybody's going to trade for Chapman, I could totally see Dave Dombrowski being that guy.
I think he would be very popular there. He's someone I think would be fine in Boston. Everybody else, miserable. But I think he would have a great time. Well, everyone check out the piece. It is on Sports on Earth. Hot Stove Offseason Predictions from Anthony Cashman. Of course, you can always follow Anthony on Twitter. If he's been on before, you know how good he is. But follow him at Castrovin, Costrovince. Anthony, this is awesome. This is going to be so much fun. Where are you holed up? Are you where's your bunker for this free agent run? Are you just hiding and trying to stay out of the way and let everyone shoot bullets at each other?
I live in Cleveland. This is my home base. And a very quiet place generally in the winter. So I think much of this free agent discussion just kind of flies right over Cleveland, and I kind of like it that way. You know, we keep a low profile here.
That's you've chosen wisely. All right, thanks, man. I had a great. This was great. I'm sure we'll chat again soon. But have a great time this week, and we'll see how it turns out.
Thank you, Will. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you to Anthony. Make sure, again, to follow him on Twitter at Castrovince. This is the Willis Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes if you feel so inclined. Come back on Wednesday. We will preview college basketball with CBS's Matt Norlander. Have a great week, everyone. Talk to you then.